Lamentations chapter 1, verses 12. Lamentations 1, 12. Is it nothing to all you who pass this way? Look and see if there's any pain like my pain, which was severely dealt out to me, which the Lord inflicted on the day of his fierce anger. Please be seated.
Good evening, everyone. There we go. All right. The Book of Lamentations. Just to reiterate a couple of things, in this particular study, I know that there's no way that we can get to everything, obviously each of these books, the lessons that they would teach, the messages that they have, I'll try to give you just a taste of it, so hopefully this will be something you'll want to go back and study, just giving you some kind of introductory material so that you can from that, grow a lesson for yourself as you study through these books. This is basically Jeremiah part two, if you will. Jeremiah, of course, the weeping prophet, the Hebrew title is Oh How, or Alas. And so it has been called the sequel to Jeremiah. I jokingly said Jeremiah part 2, but it is also referred to as the tears of Jeremiah. He is the weeping prophet. We mentioned last week studying the prophet Jeremiah and that large amount of writing that was done. And Jeremiah continued to write five poems. And so we find that in the book of Lamentations. And so we'll talk about how this is kind of a book of poetry, but it is a book of sorrow and destruction. It is a funeral dirge, really, is what it has been referred to as well. And so those are some things, hopefully, that as we begin to journey through this, the writer says, "How lonely sits the city that was full of people." So as he looks at Jerusalem, and he is sitting in a cell, he is in jail, he's imprisoned at this time, and he looks out maybe from the view that he has, and he thinks about the city that was once full of people, once a booming city, if you will, full of his brethren, his brothers from Israel. And he says, "How like a widow has she become? She who was great among the nations, she who was a princess among the provinces, has become a slave." This is how the book opens up, Lamentations 1 and verse 1. And so this is the tone of this writing. It is sad. It is written with tears, and you can see the struggle that Jeremiah has, that he feels for his people. And so, as was mentioned in verse 12, "Is it nothing to you, all you that pass by?" he says. "Behold and see if there's any sorrow like my sorrow." And that's how he's writing this, writing it as one with a broken heart. And so, Jeremiah clearly wrote this. Jewish tradition, as far back as you can go, has given this authorship to Jeremiah, really without a whole lot of anybody really bucking at that at all. The Septuagint, and so the Hebrew Bible, translated into Greek, prefaces the book with this statement: "Jeremiah sat weeping, and lamented with this lamentation over Jerusalem. And so it is very clearly written by one who was an eyewitness to what was taking place, what was happening right there, to the destruction of Jerusalem. And so you might ask, if there was a critic of that authorship of Jeremiah, you could simply say, who else would have written this? Who was right there on the scene watching all of this? Who was the one who was calling the people to amend their ways, to repent, to change? And so God, through the prophet Jeremiah, continues this this writing. And so again, this is a collection of five poems and appropriately divided into five chapters. And we'll show you how that's laid out here in just a moment. Again, this is actually written after the destruction of Jerusalem, which took place in 586. We know that Jeremiah prophesied from 626 to 566 B.C., and this was written following that final siege of Jerusalem in 586 B.C., and so it would have been very shortly after that time frame. To whom was it written? The remnant. And so, remember, Jeremiah prophesied that a remnant would return to Jerusalem. And so this is written really primarily to that remnant. Chapter 4, verse 22, it says, "The punishment of your iniquity, O daughter of Zion, is accomplished. He will keep you in exile no longer." And so this written to those who were about to come out of exile, to those who would be coming out, they would have these words. There would be a reminder of what had taken place. Again, almost like a funeral dirge. And so very sad, but there is a glimmer of hope right in the middle of it. And we'll look at that as well in a moment. So why was this written? One has said the great statesman of Jerusalem is lamenting over its destruction at the hands of Babylon. These are written as poems of grief, but ultimately to proclaim a message of hope for the remnant that God would deliver and bring back as part of the nation of Judah. And remember, Christ is going to come through that lineage of Judah. And so this is, again, God keeping His word, keeping His promises, and this reminder that God has chastened His people. And so there has been, hopefully, a lesson learned through all of this. There's a couple of things that I want to share with you that Frank Dunn wrote, and so I just want to quote directly from him. He says, "This book, written by Jeremiah after the fall of Jerusalem, contains these poems of grief." And then he goes on to say, "The message, though, is that clearly sin brings about misery and judgment. But the fact that God still loves His people is evident as well. And so there is a message of hope within that. While God must punish those who have rejected Him, those who have went astray, you will find that there is still a great compassion and love, especially for those who will amend their ways, as Jeremiah has previously stated in Jeremiah chapter 6. But there are several themes that run through this, Dunn points out. First, he says, there's a theme of mourning over this destruction of Jerusalem, the desolation that takes place. God had promised judgment upon His people for those sins that they had participated in. And Lamentations is this dirge that describes the funeral of the holy city, Jerusalem. The second theme is a confession of Judah's sin and an acknowledgement at the same time of God's righteousness and the fact that He is right for punishing Jerusalem or punishing the nation of Judah for their sins. The third theme that you find in this book is this expression of hope in the midst of it, about a restoration that would take place. And so we will see that here in just a moment as we start looking at a couple of verses within it. He is faithful to His promises, God is. And then Jeremiah has an appeal to those who have gone through this, who would be returning, this remnant that would return back to Jerusalem to remember exactly what has taken place and why they have been in that situation to begin with. What was it that led them to that? That's what he wants to remind them. Let's notice some keys to help us unlock the book, our understanding of it, the verses we will look at here in just a moment. There's a couple of key words. Clearly, this is a book of sorrow, and so sorrow is a key word there. He talks about his sorrow. Is there anyone who passes by that has a sorrow like my sorrow, he says. We just notice in chapter 1, verse 12. Tears, and then the question or the word, beginning those questions, is the word how. And so the key phrases, he hath fulfilled his word. Lamentation 2, verse 17. He will renew our days as of old. Lamentation 5 and verse 21. And so it ends as well, looking forward to yet a new day that was dawning. We mentioned chapter 1 and verse 12. Look and see if there's any sorrow like my sorrow, he says. The same chapter, verse 18. The Lord is in the right, for I have rebelled against his word. He says, but hear all you peoples and see my suffering. My young women and my young men have gone into captivity. And so this, again, this is personal for Jeremiah. And that's what I think is so sets this book apart from every other book, is you see the personal heart of Jeremiah. He is brokenhearted over what has taken place. And the sins of the people, he feels deeply indebted for them, for what they've gone through, and he hurts for them. And so he's crying out. He says, I have rebelled against his word. Chapter 2, verse 17. Another key verse. He says, the Lord has done what he purposed or what he planned, and he has carried out his word, which he commanded long ago. He has thrown down without pity. He has made the enemy rejoice over you and exalted the might of your foes. Now, not only did Jeremiah speak of these things, but other prophets have as well, including the psalmist. And so in writing those things, talking about even in the day of your calamity will I laugh, God says through the prophets. And so that idea that such was going to come about, Jeremiah says that God has kept his word. He has brought about this destruction with no pity. He has made the enemy rejoice over you and exalted the might of your foes. Chapter 3, verse 22 through 25, actually 23 is where it starts on the board, or at least behind me here. He says, the steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. We know this, right? They are new every morning. This is different than what you find in chapters 1 and chapter 2, and even in chapter 4, and most of chapter 5. Chapter 3 stands out as a high pinnacle point of this book, this poem in chapter 3, and this is the longest chapter. We'll talk about how it's laid out here in just a moment, specifically the style of writing. It is written as five different poems. But this is interesting to me because in chapter 3, in the middle of all of this, in the middle of all the suffering and sorrow and crying and heartbrokenness that he has for the people of Israel, for the people of Judah, he is remembering that God's love never ceases. His mercies, they never end. And he says, in fact, they are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. And this he's saying to God. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore, I will hope in him. The Lord is good to those who wait for him, to the soul who seeks him. And so again, this is personal for Jeremiah. And there's a great lesson to be learned in this. This is, if you will, the key chapter of the book of Lamentations. So if you're writing down the keys for unlocking, this is the key chapter. This book is in the middle of this all. Here is Jeremiah expressing a great faith in the goodness and mercy of God. And he says, there is something to look forward to every single morning because great is your faithfulness. You have kept your word, God, and even if we are being punished for our sins and all that is going on, God, you are still faithful, you are still good, you are still merciful, and therefore there is reason for hope. In the midst of all of this sorrow that they are going through, Jeremiah is able to kind of pick himself up in his strong faith that he has in God. In his hope, he is able to see that. And he makes this powerful, powerful statement that so many of us have sung over and over, right? The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. What a beautiful, beautiful thought. But again, all of this in that backdrop, if you will, of all of this dark and despair and sorrow and tearfulness that the prophet Jeremiah has. But I want you to notice this with me. In this chapter, before you get to verse 23, just notice verse 21 and 22 here. He says, "This I recall to my mind, and therefore I have hope." All of this. Now he says, I recall this to my mind. I recall the faithfulness of God. I recall the steadfastness of God. I recall His love for His people. The fact that He is gracious and merciful. All of those things. I call to my mind, he says, and they give me hope. That gives me hope. And so if you're ever feeling a little bit down in the dumps, if you're feeling like you just want to cry, I would say, open Lamentations. Cry along with Jeremiah, the weeping prophet. And when you get to chapter 3, you're going to see the pinnacle of this man's faith. His strong faith stands out as a mountain, if you will. And so if you were reading the book of Lamentations, you have chapters 1 and 2 going up the mountain. And chapter 3 is the high pinnacle of the mountain, the very mountaintop, if you will. And chapters 4 and 5, he's coming down the other side. In a way that he has great hope and he's looking forward to those blessings. They are new every morning, he says. And so picture the book of Lamentations written in that fashion. And in fact, he says in verse 22 here, verse 22, he said, "It is of the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed, because His compassions fail not." He could have consumed us in His fierce anger because of their rebellious ways. But He says, He has not consumed us. And in that, we see His mercies. They are new every morning. What a beautiful, beautiful picture that He gives here in chapter 3. By the way, the Jews chant this funeral dirge, if you will, every Friday at the Wailing Wall in Jerusalem. It is one of the five rolls, if you will, that they take with them to read and chant, such as the Song of Solomon, Ruth, Ecclesiastes, Esther, and Lamentations. These are read in the synagogue, respectively, on the feast days, the Feast of Passover, the Feast of Pentecost, and the Feast of Tabernacle, as well as the Feast of Purim. Obviously having to do especially with Esther. But also on the fall of Jerusalem. When that date rolls around every year, they read these rolls, they sing this especially Lamentations, this funeral dirge, in memorial of what had taken place. How does the city sit solitary that was once full of people? They start there and they end at the very ending, chapter 5 and verse 22. "But thou hast utterly rejected us. Thou art very angry against us." And so we see Jeremiah and his lamentations. Interestingly, the style itself of the book, I've already mentioned that it's written as five poems, and it is written in Hebrew poetry. And so while we may look at it and try to figure out how that works exactly, you won't be able to see it really in the English. But if you go through this and you start counting, you start looking at chapter 1 has 22 verses, chapter 2 has 22 verses, chapter 3 has 66 verses, chapter 4 and chapter 5 both have 22 verses. There are 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet, beginning with Aleph all the way to Tav. And those begin each line of those verses as they are laid out in each chapter, with the exception of chapter 5. Chapter 5 is different. It is rather irregular, yet it is still considered a poem in the Hebrew language. Chapter 3 is interesting, again, because there's 66 verses, 22 times 3. There's 66 verses in this, and so you can clearly see that there's a pattern to it. The first three verses begin with that first Hebrew letter, Aleph. The next three with Bet, and so on. And so it goes all the way through the Hebrew alphabet in that way. It's acrostic, really, in the Hebrew poetry. And so it is thought that this was probably written this way, possibly to aid in memorization. And again, maybe something having to do with the fact that these written during the time, right after the destruction of Jerusalem, during this, the first part of this 70-year period that they're going to be in captivity in Jerusalem. And so this was probably written so that they would remember these things and be able to memorize them. And so then coming back, they would already have it in their mind. And so this was taught to their children as well in this way. And so the acrostic was used to aid in memorization, to help them in remembering these things. And what an important lesson, if you will, in thinking about what they needed to remember coming back. Chapter 3, verse 40, says, "Let us test and examine our ways and return to the Lord." And so while yet there is this hope seen in chapter 3, there's still that reminder. Let's amend our ways. Let's look. Let's examine ourselves, we might say. 2 Corinthians 13, verse 5, let us examine ourselves whether we be in the faith. And so Jeremiah says, let us test and examine our ways and let's return unto the Lord. Chapter 4, verses 11 and 12, the Lord gave full vent to His wrath. He poured out His hot anger. He kindled a fire in Zion that consumed its very foundations. A few verses later, verse 16 and 17, the Lord Himself has scattered them. He will regard them no more. No honor was shown to the priests, no favor to the elders. Our eyes failed, ever watching vainly for help. In our watching, we watched for a nation which could not save. They were able to see Babylon coming directly at them, head on, if you will, and there was no one there to save them. And so there is this reminder of exactly what they were going through, what the prophet was seeing, and why they so desperately needed saving and needed to amend their ways, needed to change, needed to examine themselves and to see where they are. This is a rather lengthy outline. I'm going to give you a shorter one if you want to write this one down. Chapter 1, the way of wickedness. Chapter 2, the wrath of God. Chapter 3, the weight of sorrow. Chapter 4, the want of help. And you see that in the verses we just read, chapter 4, 16 and 17. Chapter 5, the wreck of iniquity. And so there's a bunch of W's in there. Some preacher somewhere wrote this, I'm sure. The way of wickedness, the wrath of God, the weight of sorrow, the want of help, and the wreck of iniquity. Chapter 1, Jerusalem is represented by this weeping widow, mourning in solitude over the misery of those exiles, those who have been taken captive, with no one to give any comfort whatsoever. No rest, no pasture, no comforter. Chapter 2, or the second poem, you see Jerusalem then as a woman veiled with a cloud who grieves over the ruin of Zion. She's looking now over the whole city. She's looking over that whole mountain of Zion and the sins of the people that moved God to throw down that city during that day. Chapter 3, or the third poem, Jerusalem is represented by the weeping prophet himself, mourning before the Most High God. And he appeals again to turn unto the Lord, verse 40, and to judge their cause and to recompense their enemies according to the work of their hands. So he's calling out as well for God to, if you will, to go after Babylon, not to just let them to sit idly by now that they've taken his people captive. Jeremiah has already stated in his main writing that was going to take place. The fourth poem, or chapter 4, Jerusalem is represented as gold that's now dimmed. So it's no longer shiny like it used to be, but it's now dimmed, it's changed in its appearance. Also, it's seen as snow that is now blacker than coal. In the fifth poem, chapter 5, Jerusalem, who's now penitent, confessing her sins, chapter 5, verse 7, pleading with God, do not forget us. Do not forget us forever, literally. Turn thou us unto thee, O Lord, and we shall be turned, renew our days as of old. Verses 20 and 21, chapter 5. There are three major lessons, if you will, truths that are brought out in this book. Number one, sin brings great tribulation and misery. It brings about great sorrow. Number two, their bondage could have been avoided. All of this could have been avoided if they had simply continued to follow God and not follow after pagan gods. And then number three, a divine chastening of his disciples was righteous in the eyes of God. It was the right thing to do. And so we see a just God. Hebrews 12 and verse 5 reminds us, despise not the chastening of the Lord. And so there was a chastening for God's people here. We find Christ in the book of Lamentations, as we do each of the books of the Bible. He is here seen as the man of sorrows, right? One who was acquainted with grief. He knew our sorrowing. He knew the sorrowing of Jeremiah. He knows your sorrows as well. And so we have again that reminder from Lamentation 1, verse 12. He says, is it nothing to you, all you who pass by? Look and see if there is any whose sorrow, like my sorrow, who have that kind of sorrow, which was brought upon me, which the Lord afflicted on the day of his fierce anger. We come to Matthew chapter 23, though, and we find Jesus himself. He is looking over the city of Jerusalem again, much like the prophet did some 500 years earlier. Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to it. How often, he says, I would have gathered you as gathered your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, but you were not willing. See, your house is left to you desolate. He says, I tell you, you will not see me again until you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord, in the name of Jehovah. Matthew 23:37-39. In Luke 19, we find it very similar said again, verse 41. And when he drew near and he saw the city, he wept over it. He is a man of sorrows in the book of Jeremiah. He is a man of sorrows sitting there in Jerusalem and weeping at Mount Zion, thinking about all of those who were scattered as a sheep having no shepherd. And so he says, would that you, even you, had known on this day the things that make for peace, but now they are hidden from your eyes. They had rejected him. Remember what Isaiah said about him? He was a man of sorrows and acquainted with our grief, and we hid as it was our face from him. Why? Because of sin. And they were rejecting him. And so Jesus certainly understood something of Jeremiah's plight. From Jeremiah, there are great lessons to be learned, and I pray that you will go back and study the prophet, his major writing, as well as the book of Lamentations together. It is powerful, powerful study. It will be one that will produce great faith. You'll see a strong faith come out of that study, because you see the prophet Jeremiah, though he is weeping, though he is sorrowful, all that he is going through, his trust in God never wanes. And so I pray that we too gain that great faith as we study the prophet Jeremiah and his writings. If there's a way that we could encourage you this evening, we're going to sing a song in a moment to do just that, to invite you to come down and make your needs known before the congregation. We'll pray with you. We'll encourage you every way that we know how, as you have need. Maybe it's the case this evening, one who's ready to obey the gospel. If you believe in Jesus Christ, a man who was acquainted with sorrows, he's weeping over Jerusalem because they have rejected him, the one who came to bring about salvation to mankind. If you believe in him as the very Son of God and would repent of sin, confess your faith in him and be baptized, put on Christ, Galatians 3:27, the Lord will save you and add you to his church. And so if we can help you in some way, come to the front while we stand, while we sing.